I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Oh, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week, under the angle grinder is Chappie. I say that because they use an angle grinder a lot in this particular movie.
Yes, so they do.
Rather than putting him under the dissection, we're going to take an angle grinder to him. I'm Jack Comerford, joined in the studio by Miss Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Sarah Stratton.
Hello.
Dimitri Panos.
Hello, movie fans.
Okay. And the reason why I'm a little bit aflutter is because I gather from your reactions that you're not a fan, but let's talk.
We are talking about Chappie.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make that clear.
Didn't I say that? I said that up
front.
Did
you? Okay,
yeah,
I did. Chappie.
Yeah, I said Chappie. I didn't say the other word.
I don't want to confuse it with any other, good robot movies.
Oh, I see. Get it. Okay, so Dimitri, why don't you jump in? How do you feel about this particular...
I thought last week, or a week or so ago when we talked Focus, and I said, boy, that was the first movie this year to make me angry. Mm-hmm. I didn't think so soon I would meet the movie that would make Focus look in focus.
It was a warm-up. Maybe we should have seen Focus after. We would have liked it more.
I nicknamed this movie Crappy. This was, for me, the worst movie I've seen so far this year, and it was the first. It's very rare for me to ever get the urge to walk out of a movie, but this one did it for me. We'll go into production. There are great things to discuss, I think, in the filmmaking of this.
Yeah.
But as far
as a movie experience,
not at all.
Okay.
I'm also going to say on top, I am not a huge Neil Blomkamp fan.
Okay.
District 9 to me was watchable, but I had story issues. Mm-hmm. Elysium, albeit better than Chappie, still had some story issues. Like, he's just declining as a filmmaker and as a storyteller. And I think he's one of the worst storytellers Hollywood has right now. I don't understand why they continue to make his films. He works off his first drafts. And it frightens the crap out of me that they've just handed him the keys to the alien car. And I'm like, oh, no. You're supposed to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into a lot more.
Why don't you jump right in there?
Okay, I'll jump in there.
Setting the stage nicely, Dimitri, please, Sarah.
We'll do a negative and then a positive and then a negative and then a positive. I also had the desire to walk out of this movie, which also does not hit me very often. Mm-hmm. Kind of was giving me flashbacks of when we watched Johnny Depp's Transcendence, where I was kind of like, yeah, I didn't like this one either. And I was like, maybe it's just me. Maybe I don't like this whole concept of AI. And then I was like, no, I've seen a lot of AI movies I like. This one just doesn't cut it for me. So it's not that. My favorite part about it the design of Chappie himself.
Mm-hmm.
The actual robotic design I thought was great. I loved the character they created through him, but how he looks, how he functioned. I thought it was like just a very believable looking robot, and on film I thought it looked fantastic. A lot of the story points did not hold up for me. A lot of the character work did not hold up for me. A lot of the plot holes killed me. And I feel like there's this thing called motivation and, like, decision-making, which are normally really important in telling a story.
Only if you want to have character arc. And
only if you need,
commitment and believability.
Yeah. And this one, so many questions. How did you get to this point? How did you make it through the editing room? How were there not red flags? Or, like, if there were red flags, you were just like, hey, I made a lot of money on movies before. Trust me.
So... Marissa, turn the ship around, because I have a feeling
I'm gonna try, but but okay.
So you can't steer this off the tracks either, right? Because it's just rolling.
We are rolling.
Because that's a beautiful robot.
Keep trying to go straight, and trying not to reiterate what these two have just said. But yes, I also contemplated walking out, which I never do, but because I love movies that much that I will stick it to the end, and I'm amazed that I did.
I love my $20 that much that I will stick it.
There you go. First of all, going into this movie, I wanted to see Hugh Jackman, big draw for anyone. I was really excited to see him. And Sigourney Weaver, also big draw, especially in the sci-fi genre. You think it'd be great. And we'll get more into it, but she was totally underutilized. And then even Dev Patel, he's a great actor, Slumdog, The Newsroom. Also, like, great actor lineups. Even Chartel, who's been in all of the District 9 movies and whatnot. But so I was looking forward to the actors. And then it was completely just bogged down by the plot holes, the stories, the characters, and then even having the musician rap band, what's their name?
I don't Wonder, know.
Sorry for all y'all who played, you know, Ninja and Yolandi. They were so unbelievable and ridiculous as so-called villains.
They were the most retarded grand gangsters I've seen.
The hardest time even enjoying trying to watch them. Oh. And they were in this whole movie. Yeah. I was just like, just get rid of them, please. And they brought this movie down for me, along with the obvious plot holes and big questions at the end of this movie.
You guys are smoking the crack. This was amazing. I thought it was incredible. I'm trying. I can't even get a full sense of. I have to say, though, I didn't hate it anywhere near as much as you guys, which is surprising because I'm usually the guy that is really upset about the story.
I call shenanigans.
Absolutely. But, I will say this, you know, I saw it and there was only about 10 or 12 people in the theater when I saw it, and I happened to be sitting in front of them. And as the movie was just ending, before the credits even rolled, I turned around, you know, and everybody had already gone. And I was like, whoa, what happened? I didn't have the desire to leave. Maybe because I didn't have a huge expectation. I don't know. But, you know, there were moments and even scenes that I'm going, oh, that's cool. That's fun. I can't really argue too much about your concerns and issues because I shared them. But for some reason, I was like, oh, wait. But I will ask this, though. I have no idea who this was made for, because I think if they had made it for the 13-year-olds and didn't try to do anything more with it and stop, you know, don't rip the bodies apart and things like that and go R, then it would have been a fine movie for that crowd.
You make an amazing point that I think we're all discussing before coming in here. It was like, I'm not one. I am definitely not one. If you're making a Die Hard movie, if you're making, you got to go full R. Yeah. I am not one of those apologists that says, oh, we have to water this down because we want to get another audience in here, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you're making a science fiction action movie and it's supposed to be rated R, you make it R. This is the one exception as, like, I left going, this movie didn't have to be R at all, and you could have marketed it to kids. Hey, it just... Chappie was such an annoying character to me that it brought up Jar Jar Binks. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was like, oh my god, we have a CGI-ish character that is probably more annoying than Jar Jar Binks. But the Jar Jar Binks philosophy, according to George
almost
Lucas,
was
that
years.
Well, yeah, they almost did. But his philosophy was he wanted to create a character for kids that kids would like, you know, younger than 13 or whatever, and whether you want to forgive him for that or not, you can at least understand why Jar Jar exists. Chappie, on the other hand, to be a rated R movie, I was like going, you know, if they took out some of the violence, or at least
I think it was the language, really.
Well, you take out some of the violence, you take out some of the language, you could have marketed this to a much younger audience, and you probably would have cheated a better gross than what they ended up getting doing it. And, you know, you could have said it was for kids, but in the end, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know who this movie was for. at the end, because it wasn't for the great science fiction action guy like myself.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
I think this is a factor that builds on that as to why that I do consider this almost more than a bad movie. I consider it a horrible movie.
Whoa.
Okay. Because, yes, who is the audience? That's a huge question that I felt like they didn't answer well. On top of that, how you get into it as an audience member, mm-hmm. the point of view of which this movie is shot, I don't understand.
You mean, who's the lead?
I guess Chappie was the lead, but I don't know who I was supposed to identify with. Yeah, well. I don't know who I was supposed to follow. Their method of, like, filming to me changed throughout the thing, where they have, like, a bookending of newsroom footage that I just felt was completely unnecessary.
Bookending? Wait a minute. This movie starts off with footage about... This movie starts off with news footage about,
horrible crime.
It opened up with... artificial intelligence, blah, blah, blah.
Anderson Cooper.
And then all of a sudden it says something like 18 months prior.
Yeah.
But we never went back to the beginning. There was no bookend.
There was no bookend that made sense to say,
how did we get to the beginning of this movie where they're debating artificial intelligence? That never happened.
Well, you're adding to what I was already saying, was that there was like... five functions of filmmaking. Where, like, what I was leaving with was what they ended with, where you have the news anchor, which is, and she's talking about, like, what the world's coming to, and they're looking for Chappie, and you have her point of view, and then you're right. Then we had the interviews at the beginning that were, like, documentary style, where it seems like someone's come in and is now investigating. And then on top of that, you get, like, the two random shots in the middle of it, where he's filming himself. He's, like, self-taping as he's making his robot artificial intelligence, and you have those different camera angles, and then you have like some from Chappie's point of view and some from the cop's point of view, and I just like didn't understand like who I was on the same team as. I didn't get who I was following. All the storylines were just like not fulfilled to me, and then a lot of the characters had these scenes where they had like... You say that a character earns, like, emotional silence. Mm-hmm. You, like, you get to know them. So by the point you get a scene where it's just a reaction-based scene, you understand why it was there. And we had scenes like that within the first third of the movie.
Mm-hmm. They hadn't earned them yet, is what you're saying.
No, because I didn't understand who they were. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was being force-fed that this person is upset, or force-fed that this person is dedicated, and I didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there with them. It was like, you need to be already at this emotional state because we have to get on with all these other plot points in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't understand what angle they were coming from.
I have a question about that. Do you want to add to that, Marissa? Because you look like you want to say
Just about the emotional aspects.
Right.
Like, they tried delving into the whole consciousness storyline, which, as bad as, and I'm going to reference Trends, Sentence. As bad as that movie was, at least the audience could understand that artificial intelligence is not as real and as genuine as real love or real emotions that a real human emotes. And they didn't get me that emotionally invested in this particular movie. They tried to dabble in it, but they failed and they didn't succeed at the emotional level. Like, this is a human with a artificial intelligent robot with real human emotions. I didn't get that.
Let me ask a question then. Let me pose this question, because it seems like it's obviously unfocused in terms of its perspective for Sarah's point of view, I think. Don't you think? I
mean, yeah, unless you can tell me differently.
But let me ask you this. No, I would agree. But let me ask you this. Do you think it suffers from the idea, because he and Neil has written this as a trilogy, and this is the first installment. He has treatments for the other two, but he hasn't written scripts for them. So do you think it suffers from that, much like Jupiter Ascending suffered from, because they set up all this world stuff, and they have all the, they're trying to tell too much story? Because maybe all that stuff was put in there as little Easter eggs
for
later
the next ones.
And I'm just wondering, because he certainly didn't resolve a lot of those things that he put in there, or there were threads that he laid in that he didn't actually
utilize. That's a hard question, because like, I actually just had this debate about a different trilogy with someone else, but it was about Star Wars. We were watching Episode 4, and for me, like, I love Episode 4 as a movie, as just a singular story, as that one entity. If right. like they hadn't gotten the sequels and right. made this whole universe, I liked that movie. Mm-hmm. And the person I was with was like, no, there are so many unanswered questions in this movie that I only appreciate it because I know all of the answers from later movies. And I was like, oh, that's such a hard thing to distinguish because, like, we can't watch this all at once. Mm-hmm. So these, who knows, maybe they are wonderful points of view, but this movie didn't make me want to see another one. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, the first Star Wars, I was like, great, I'm so excited, there's more for me to learn, but I don't need it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. this one, I don't need it, and I don't, maybe I do need it, but I don't want it. Like, no, obviously, I guess I do need it for this to make sense, but I don't want to see it, because this one was bad.
Yeah, I think the person you're talking with Star Wars about is thinking Empire Strikes Back, because Star Wars is pretty self-contained, and it doesn't leave anything unanswered, but that's another argument for another show. Look, Chappie, yes, I didn't know he wrote this as a trilogy, but, you know, he was like, you start with a
short
frame
that he has a,
where, yeah, it's from a short,
Tetraval, which is the name of the weapons company.
And, you know, it's 18 months earlier.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, so what happens? And he's like, well, actually, I wrote a trilogy, so I haven't written the other two, but I wrote treatments.
Yeah.
So I think what happens over the next two, but so basically, he wrote a movie that doesn't, and he doesn't write a self-contained story. Problem number one. Number two, one of my problems with Neil Blomkamp is he is so set on his message or messages, he forgets about story. He doesn't care about plot holes because he's so intent on getting his message out. And I say it's just a breakdown of the studio system, period. Like, nobody does the checks and balances. Nobody takes the script, reads it, and says, you know what? This doesn't make sense. Like, how does that happen? For example, Hugh Jackman's character kidnaps Chappie.
Yeah.
And they set it up, and he's got this amazing pulse gun, which, bump, shuts him off, done. They put him in the van.
He's
Chappie
got the
wakes up.
Looking for.
Yeah, he's and he wakes up, and, you know, Chappie struggles. Two things. I was like going, wait a minute. Isn't Chappie like sort of kind of superhuman strength?
Well, yeah.
He could just like
hydraulic.
Do this. Yeah. But no, none of that happens. And then he's struggling. And Hugh Jackman, I believe, actually says a line where he says, keep him down, pin him down. And I'm like going, don't you have that gun that just took him out 2 seconds ago that you can use again? Like, why am I watching him fight? Like, why am I watching this? And it's stuff like that that they don't like think about, where, and it's all about artificial intelligence. It's all about, breeding, like, is artificial intelligence good? Which, look, as a science fiction guy, this movie is science fiction for dummies who have never seen a science fiction movie or a science fiction show. This is not an old trope. This goes back to the 60s, to the 50s, to when science fiction, Asimov, iRobot, talks about all of this stuff. So we're not talking anything new here. So if you're going to bring something up, and they could have, like with Creator, Maker. I was like, Maker here is a non-Caucasian deity. He is a maker. Like, wow, we could have gone down this avenue, and this would have been interesting. This could have been fascinating. But no, we spent so much time with these gangsters, these retarded gangsters, like, who couldn't, they couldn't raise an egg from a chicken. Like, it was, you are kidding me. And then,
ridiculous.
Like, the whole scene with Dev Patel and Maker, I was like going, wait a minute. Maker comes in. He's like the only guy that can help them. He's the only guy that understands technology and what he has done and created. And yet their first thing is, after like 2 minutes, it wasn't even, we're going to shoot you.
Yeah.
Well, where's that going to get you? And then it was like, well, listen, I need to come back to watch him. Like, listen, if you want him, but I got to come back. And I thought they agreed. And when he comes back, they're like, what are you doing back here? And I'm like, wait. Didn't you just have the conversation that he was going to come back?
Well, you said they were dumb. They don't have a good memory.
Oh, my head, but it was just stuff like that that really bothered me. Okay. And again, we talked about Transcendence. Transcendence was lineal, and it had, we talked about the themes that it was trying to bring up, and Transcendence slogged through It was still a better movie. Like I don't want to admit it.
Let's talk about some of the things.
Wait,
go ahead.
I want to say something.
Please.
I feel like Dimitri just opened up three topics of things that I want to talk about. First, I'm going to state them, and then we can figure out which ones we want to talk about first. One, you mentioned plot holes, and I think there's even more obviously than you mentioned. So I think that's something we need to address. Number two, you mentioned themes, which. There is good ideas that maybe we could talk about that he was trying to get across. Mm-hmm. And the third one is what could have made this movie better.
You have plot holes.
Plot holes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the intentions are... Look, my whole theory about movie making is that nobody sets out to make a bad movie. Like, I don't believe that people say, I want to make a movie, and I want to make it so bad that I want those people on Anatomy of a Movie, to really lay it. No. I think that nobody wants to make bad movies. They happen. Mm-hmm. And I think they happen, and you can sort of, if you're on set, you at times you might know that it's happening, and maybe the freight train started and you just can't slow it down. In this movie, though, prior to it got to filming, it was like somebody needs to check this stuff out. And there are good components of this movie, like filming in Johannesburg and how they were able to film in Johannesburg. The cinematography and filming on digital and creating a way to make motion capture affordable for the production budget that was given to this movie. You know, all these things I thought were, wow, too bad all this wasn't in a better movie. But I did, on research, I did find it fascinating. You know, I don't want to just tear into movies. And we can talk plot holes because there were a ton of them. But two, we should talk about the cinematography, how it was filmed, and using Charlotte Copley and putting him in a gray suit and not doing full motion capture. They actually animated Chappie hand-drawn. That is time-staking. It's a throwback for animation. And instead of doing the tennis balls all over the body like the Andy Serkis route, they went a different way to make it more economical. And I appreciate that because I thought it looked great.
It looked good.
They did.
And you could visually, see Chartel like in it. He's like, that looks just like him. The way they animated it.
Yeah.
And even when Dev becomes there, that looks like Dev running.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, no, they did a really, really good job. And being able to animate in such a way, I mean, look, it probably saved them money to do it. And having animators work that way and working and with the Red digital camera.
$49 million for a budget, you're going to have to.
Right.
So they found a way. So
yeah, they found a way. All in, it was about $80 million. You know, I forget what Elysium cost. But, you know, so listen, I did respect the cinematographer. It was like a 65-day shoot all in. I just wish somebody would just have shepherded the story more. And I, again, the guy's made three movies thus far.
So you guys think themes are way more important to him than story. Is that what that's?
I think it's his message. I think it's message, not theme. He tries to get a message across.
Okay.
And he focuses on that so much.
That's what you're feeling.
He forgets story.
I think to me it's like. To me, it's if, like, this sounds horrible.
Here it goes. This good.
No. I've been trying not to say that because that would have been mean. I feel like people were, like, having this really, like, one night they were kicking back and they were having all this, like, deep conversation. They were like, let's make a movie that deals with all of this. Let's talk about morals and, like, people with religion and how that affects, like, where the world's going. Like, what is evolution? Like, how would AI affect this? And they go and they come up with all these crazy ideas. And they're like, let's now put this in one movie. Mm. And they try and, like, just put out all these slight questions that to me are never fully dug into. Like, you created a character like Hugh Jackman who you've given the qualities of being a
former soldier
and very smart engineer, because he was able to make a robot, and he's working in the same cubicle aisle as of a very
Dion the genius.
And he was able to make a virus that turns
down. He's able to make make a virus. He, on top of that, seems to have this whole very religious side of him, where he has a moral attitude that is against AI, mm-hmm. because it is just not in what God would want, but at the same time is, like, willing to use violence at all costs and is willing to, like, kill anyone brutally and chop them to pieces.
He enjoys
and
it.
Also to, like, kill people who are unarmed. And I'm just like, well, you've just fed me, like, five personalities and one person that I've seen on screen for 20 minutes. I don't understand how I'm supposed to understand.
No, that's a religious zealot.
I think it was all explained in the haircut.
Okay, yeah. Well, that was a problem in this whole movie. Like, everyone had mullets. What was up with that?
And Ninja and...
Well, you want to talk, like, you know, there was this scene where he, like, he violently slams Dev Patel's head into a desk, pulls out a gun, puts it to his
exactly.
head.
Exactly. And everybody's
where's
like... Security?
I was
how is anyone not stopping him? No, like, oh, it's just a prank? No, he pulled out a gun.
No, he pulled out a gun.
He has military background.
Oh, he's Wolverine?
How come no one tried to stop him?
No one's going to mess with Hugh Jackman.
Or that, like, when he was going, like, Wolverine. Sorry, I'm getting really, really loud. When he was, like, every time he was, like... be going to his robots and whatever. It's like there's no security.
There's never
security.
No video cameras.
He keeps looking behind him. Like no one's gonna follow you.
The God key is gone. Who knew?
You know, it's like where's the security? Like no one's able to stop him doing whatever bad scheming he's doing.
That's one of my favorite parts because I did get laugh. Where the fact that key is so important and it's behind a cage with a lot.
And no one notices for 3 days, yeah, and then they're like, oh, it's fine. And then get it back at the end of the night, and then no one ever calls about it again.
Well, no,
so Jordan Avery even
some
never
person
knows.
Calls. No. He gets one call.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. After that, he says,
get it back by the end of the night.
Or I'm going to call your boss.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get it back by the end of the night. No. And the boss is not called.
No, because Vincent got the key that night.
But my whole thing was, is when he gets kidnapped by gangster rappers there, I'm like going, you could just call the police. Like, have you never heard of the anonymous tip? I mean, like, what the hell? Like, and then he just disappears.
Well, but
like,
then Chappie might get destroyed.
Destroyed.
So Chappie's the only place he has his program. What, he didn't back up that program? Okay, so he's retarded too.
Right.
I mean, he's supposedly a computer engineer. Like, he doesn't back up this information.
It's a consciousness. You can't be in more than one memory at a time. That's why when it got canceled out of Chappie, it got sent. Otherwise, you could just duplicate it.
But don't worry, because you can save mommies. Hers is going to be fine.
But, okay, and that was also my issue with the storyline in and of itself. Because, there's the whole looming storyline that Chappie needs a whole new body. So we have that ticking time bomb, storyline to keep going through. And then finally at the end, we finally get transfer Chappie's consciousness to the next body. It's like, okay, he's still going to need another body when that one dies too.
Yeah,
and then literally in the same scene, because he gets transferred and we hear the whole voiceover from the newscast at the end that they discontinued making the robots. So I was like, well, eventually he's going to run out. So eventually, inevitably, he's still going to die.
Well, that's like all of us.
Yeah. So exactly. They were in a rush, but they obviously just didn't think of the long-run longevity of Chappie because he's eventually going to die.
No, this is an origin story. The next one is everyone is a robot and no one can die. And it's how did we get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because Chappie and Dion were created this way. This is really just an origin story of a whole species.
Yeah, good luck going into those movies.
Yeah.
My other, you know, if you want to talk plot hole, like, okay, the title alone, the way that it's spelled is CHAPP small I back to big E again, that usually suggests that the letters preceding it are a, like, stand for something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell Chappie stands for. He didn't
You're
start
a good
up for,
chap.
Yeah,
Chappie.
Chappie.
Yeah, what's
Happy
the small
Chappie.
I for? Yeah, what's the small I for?
Okay, but
isn't it like iPhone? I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't know. But, computer, whatever. But sorry to add to that. They did say in interviews, Chartel said that Chappie's intelligence and emotional range is only 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So if going to Chappie and how they spell it, maybe that's just how a kid would spell it. I don't know. I'm just trying to back that up.
But earlier, let's go into Chappie a little bit more, because Dimitri, it annoyed you. Like, did it annoy everybody else? Did Chappie, actual character?
Was... Okay, the thing is, like, okay, for being a... Chappie is supposed to be the lead character, protagonist mm-hmm. role that we're all supposed to root for. You don't make a character annoying and arrogant and doing all these bad crimes. Why would we root for this?
Well, yeah, but hang on a sec. I didn't find him as annoying as you did at all. He's a tabula rasa. So the fact that he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong yet. He knows some right, some wrong. That's the point.
Nature versus
nurture. So you can't really hold him at fault for doing the horrible things when that's kind of the argument is nature nurture thing. But at some point he realizes that he can't do those things anymore, because you know, you can see him, he has some sort of humanity with the guard on the ground and he's bleeding and he doesn't put him to sleep.
But I think I was just more upset at the fact that like he was modeled off of the worst role model ever. Well,
but this again,
but I think that's the point he was trying to make.
I think
though,
this is a agreed.
He was stuck in a horrible situation, and he was still able to have some sort
but
of.
But think about.
But it wasn't enough.
Think about this think about this for a minute. And again, when we talk about how maybe this could have been made better, okay, you have Maker who gives his creation commandments. Chappie, I don't want you to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't want you. You are not to do. He was basically giving him part of his Ten Commandments of life, mm-hmm. okay? It's the Isaac Asimov's robot rules, mm-hmm. okay? Yeah. It is like, you can't do
First
this.
No harm, don't hurt anyone.
Yeah, don't hurt, right. So we have this, which is a very interesting... It's a very interesting premise.
It's almost the same fourth protocol as the first RoboCop and the whole thing.
Well, and we were going to talk RoboCop because, again, a far better movie that deals with consciousness and artificial intelligence.
Which one?
You know what? I even said the remake of RoboCop was better than this. But, you know, you can talk the original RoboCop, Peter Weller. But no, in this movie, like, it would have been more fascinating if your Maker, who gives you your commandments, and as you said, he was being raised by retarded people. And it's like nature versus nurture. Like, this, how does he go against his commandments that are laid down from his God, mm-hmm. let's say? You know, again, an interesting concept that just went nowhere. I mean, it got lost. And
let's call them idiots.
Idiots.
They were not smart.
I get to use my Boston accent, so I use it for effect. I just do the,
But here's the thing. When Chappie first was, quote, born, and he was mm-hmm. playing the scared little thing, and everything. So none of that had any kind of, or when he was getting beat. See, when he was getting beaten up and thrown rocks at, and all that other stuff, and did that at all get to you? Because that actually got to me. I flashed on Reginald Denny of all things, and I was I felt horrible in that sequence, because I think it was just the ultimate violence to something. Even if it was a machine, a robot, what didn't matter to me? The fact that it was such an innocent creature that didn't want to be. In any way combative or hurtful in any way, and the sheer violence of it all was effective to me in the movie. Did that not? It didn't reach you at all. It didn't get you.
I agree, because I think it was the ridiculousness that he was just dropped off just to be beaten up by these people who happened to like have all the firebombs and like yes, let's destroy it because it's for shits and giggles.
Well, it did represent a car.
Sure. Yeah, I get that too. So, but it was also like, I think it was the added audio factor to it, because we hear Chappie like begging and pleading like mm-hmm. a little kid, like a human being. Mm-hmm. That's what got to me, because Chappie had no control over the situation. That's mm-hmm. where it affected me.
But I'm just wondering, because you mentioned how they didn't earn their emotional silences, but that's not mm-hmm. a silence, but did it not earn that for you? Did you not relate to him
didn't
at all.
Annoy me as much as some people uh-huh. did. Like, if anything, I thought that, like, I know one of the choices in designing the robot is that they really did want it to have a very blank face. Like, they did give it a tiny bit of emotion with, like, the eyebrow bar and the chin, but, like, it was so we could emote our own feelings on this robot. Like, they were specifically designed that way, and I do think it worked at certain points. When he gets lit on fire, I felt bad for him. Also, like, when he's just petting the dog, and, like, it's very simple, just petting the dog, especially when we get, like, the dog references later. Like, there were moments that I did like from Chappie. My bigger issue was that there were parts of his intelligence that were improving so much faster than others, where I didn't understand. Sometimes it would like cause me to, it would cause me to step out of the movie when in one scene you're seeing Chappie find consciousness and discover this and make all of these advancements on the computers or with the helmet. And then the next scene later, he's still believing that they were going to sleep when he's seeing the blood and throwing darts at them.
Yeah, like, I know.
It was going back and forth to me with how old he was represented as.
I kind of bought the whole idea that he could learn exponentially because it's a digital format. I get that part, but it was like, well, part, everything kind of has to grow.
And so that bothered me is that I felt like that parts of Chappie's consciousness were growing so much faster than others. Because you do, this movie sets you up to believe that he can because you... It's not a baby. They talk about how he's going to be able to speak. He's going to be so much smarter. His brain's so much more intelligent. And that wasn't even on all filters of his life. Like, I wanted to see his mathematic brain grow at the same rate as his emotional brain
the
or
why
whatnot.
It didn't, But the reason why it worked for me is I think that was the echo, or I should say how humans learn. We don't all learn at the same... Not every part of our personality learns at the same rate. But what didn't work for me is that it seemed like certain parts of him just stopped. It's not like they were growing at all. Other parts were going, it's like,
why? Exactly.
And I just thought it was uneven.
Especially since it was brought up that the internet, you can get almost any information.
Yeah, as soon as he got the internet, I was going, like, how could he not know?
Yeah, I'm just like, okay.
Or with all that's on the internet, it felt like all of it got in, like, transcendence.
Or with the car robberies.
Yeah, I know.
How that, like, he told them they were all his dad's car, and, like, it never, none of the other factors of, like...
He didn't ask, well, how many cars does your dad have?
There was no, like, let me put this together. And if you have a kid, especially utilize the fact that everyone mocks kids for saying why all the time.
But can you really fault them? Look who was raising him. I mean, really, seriously.
No, I get it. And again, it just bothered me that the one person that they didn't want around him was the one person who technology-wise could help them. It's, you know, and then you brought up the helmet, which is like, oh, this is the all-encompassing helmet because, oh, it's one thing to put it on a human biometric brain scanner
designed to read a human's neurons.
But, you could put it on electric wiring and diodes and it'll do the same
They're in the exact same place.
It was feats don't fail me now. I didn't hear that song.
Honestly, as soon as he put on the helmet, I'm thinking, oh, this is this is going to work. It's
working.
It's going to work. My God. That's one of the moments where I laughed.
12-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
That almost is
because I mean, if it's all, it's like you can like just use a plug-in. Have to use the thing.
You have a port somewhere, don't you? You're a robot.
Unless you're the new iBook.
Another thing. That was the problem with Chappie because he was developed in certain ways and undeveloped in some ways. Technology obviously developed. The fact that he could figure out how to type up consciousness in 2 seconds was ridiculous. And then his speech was very developed too, but the emotional, not so much. So that's where I had problems with Chappie. It's like, he's not fully developing all things on the same level.
And it just took from better movies.
For me, I agree. I mean, it was uneven, but there are parts of his innocence that I appreciated and I liked they held on to it, but what I wanted, again, for a character actor, is to see some of that start to fall away as he gains more and more information and assimilates it.
And again, let me bring up, again, I just want to go back because we talk about how do perhaps maybe another theme of the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this movie had, there were a lot of science fiction tropes in this, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have Dev Patel as Maker, okay? And he's the smart kid. He's the one that has the sensitivity and whatnot, and he represents this character, right? So then we have Sigourney Weaver, who's the CEO of...
Tetraval.
Tetraval, right? Now, this character represents, like, and they could have made a much bigger thing about it. Like, this is all about corporate greed because didn't care about sentience, didn't care about artificial intelligence because in that character, in that time, how does that make me money right now? And my whole thing is, what CEO, if a person comes up to him and says, it's not going to cost you a dime, just let me try this out and we'll talk about the applications. R&D. Yeah, R&D. And then, no, don't do it. Which forces him to turn into a life of crime and kidnap and steal, whatever. So, but all these various tropes of nature, nurture, having a maker, laying down commandments, having corporate greed, having Hugh Jackman as the Luddite, who's religious. You know, you say he's about five characters. No, a religious zealot will kill people for doing, like, I disagree because one religious zealot will kill people for his and or hers or that group's belief. That person had his beliefs about artificial intelligence. He wanted his program is very much like RoboCop. We want the ED-209.
Like it.
Yeah, he looked like the ED-209. And so you have all these different tropes, which you could have explored a hell of a lot better and done it in a way where you go, oh, okay, well, that's that version's thing. And they just threw him up. It was like literally, he just put it in, you know, he ate all the pages and puked them up on thing. And here we go. They're all together. We're going to mishmash them. Not make any sense because I think the tropes were there. I think Neil Blomkamp's like,
maybe he thought that people would infer so much that he didn't have to really do any character development.
Well, no, but I think that like from a religious standpoint, I think Hugh Jackman's character could have been so fleshed out where he believed in his beliefs. And then you have Dev Patel when you've gone from a religious factor. If he's the maker, how does this maker go against this person's religious beliefs? Where this person's religious beliefs, he says, I don't believe you're the maker. Like, you don't have that control. You're not the maker. Like, all of these ideas could have been fleshed out, just given the time. And again, I didn't mean to say, no, I didn't mean to be, like, harsh or anything, but I'm just saying there was so much there to mine from, to make good science fiction, you know, which is about human condition.
But here's the thing, I thought it was too much he was trying to say. He had too many messages, too many things.
Yeah, that was part of why I was saying that he was almost like multi-.
Take
people,
enough time with any of the characters for anybody to really attach to them to get to earn that emotional science, as you were mentioning earlier. Because to me, he was just breakneck speed, just tell, and just throw, rather than spend the stuff. Because even like we were saying, Yolandi, all of a sudden she's a mommy. It's like,
is a mommy.
And I mean, there was so much of that. I was just going, just spend a little time there with these people to make them real. Talk about, and here's the thing. Chappie seemed more human than all the humans. Didn't even spend time with the humans to make them more than one dimensional.
But one of the funniest things that happened is like, I don't want to be counting out the drugs in front of the baby.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, but the guns, the language, all this. That's okay. I'm going to teach him how to.
Well, that was also just a really bad representation.
The robot could take the drugs
of that guy. Like, and the fact that like they called him American or like America, and it was like the kind of stereotyping like what we count narcotics and drugs and violence and whatnot. I was like, that in itself just made me angry.
Oh,
that
like, didn't make me angry at all.
Bad presentation.
Like, and again, it took from like...
That's ridiculous.
Who's in a good presentation?
Yeah. No one.
It was Blade Runner, you know? I mean, and again, it was set up in such a fascinating way, but again, it takes from different movies. So in Blade Runner, we have our replicants that have a lifespan, a four-year lifespan. It was set up early in the movie that Chappie has a lifespan because
his battery's going to wear out. Somehow tied to his uniform.
Okay, first of all, Chappie lived a long life on a low battery.
Yeah, that's true. He was red for much
time. That was way too long.
Apple
was like, he would have died
that,
like 20
years. But in any case, but again, when you're talking about longevity, of sentience. And you have, I mean, that's one of the themes that Blade Runner explores. And again, I'll look at Blade Runner as saying, this is a movie that has a lot of themes running through it, but they all, You can break it down and make
it
sense.
It takes a lot more time.
It takes a lot more time. But, and again, when you have a maker, mm-hmm. and you have, well, why maker is my lifespan? Like, why is it going to, why am I going to expire? Mm-hmm. And have the maker, you know, try to deal with this, and then having your to become fully aware, you have to face death in mm-hmm. one way, shape, or form, which Chappie never does.
Well, you know, in a sense, he doesn't realize there's another way. At the end of the movie, he gives the last robot or whatever we want mm-hmm. to call it to Dev. He doesn't mm-hmm. realize there's another way. He thinks that's it. I'm saving the maker and I'm dying. So he does have his moment.
But about a quarter of the way, in the movie, I think I do recall a scene where somebody says, "Oh, let's make an order for 100 more of these robots," and I'm like, "Going, oh, there's only one left." I go,
"Yeah, but he doesn't know that."
Yeah,
he
I know, but know neither do our main characters.
But that's my point. My point is that Chappie thinks he's going to die. He thinks my time is over. I'm going to save Maker. So he does have that heroic selfless act. That's all I'm saying.
Is okay.
That, in that respect, it fulfills that purpose.
But I will good pull back news, and that. 2 seconds later, have a solution. Yeah. Because guess what? Of all things, the God key is in this room, left unattended, and I'm going to magically find it in this tiny USB port that I didn't know was here. But I'm going to find it within the 2 dramatic seconds before your battery dies, and we're all going to be able to get this
before
the doors open.
You beat me down that way. I can't touch it, because as soon as that happened, I went, how did he know it was there?
Yeah.
Did he see the movie, too? I guess, how did he know?
So, it's just, again, this breaks down not being able to watch, not being able to look at a script and saying, well, but they didn't connect. And you could have had a thought-provoking science fiction movie that brought up some amazing topics, but again,
I think that's exactly what it did. It brought up amazing topics. It just never really...
It just never... Well, and I think that's a problem with him.
It set up a great promise and a great premise and never fulfilled
it. Can I say something?
Yes.
Did you feel... do you feel... All right, let's separate story. Let's separate screenwriting from directing.
Okay.
Do you think as a director... He's a bad director.
I'm not going to say he's a bad director. I'm just...
I typically would have said no. I think JT and I talked about this on Box Office Breakdown, where he can set up some really beautiful visuals. The scale of it, the pace of it, the danger of it. I think that he has some really great techniques about making the movie look really great. But for the director point of... Like, I already addressed that I have a problem with point of view. Mm-hmm. And that does come from the director's choice.
Your lead?
Yeah.
What is that arc?
Mm-hmm. Give him is that I think if you paired him, and JT said this, so I'm kind of stealing this from him, if you paired him with a really great writer, and he got to put the scope on it and create something beautiful, I think it could really work. I think that he could be a director, but I just think that it's more visually based than something like this, where he has so many ideas in his head, and I feel like he is a very smart person, and then he's going to create these beautiful videos, and then so we get a mess.
I felt that way about him as a storyteller. Now, I do understand that a director also has to be a storyteller. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, he's his own storyteller. Yeah. He's writing, directing. You know, I still fear that Fox... Listen, Fox, before you go ahead and continue with Alien, I know he's working on the script. Mm-hmm. Send it to me first for free. I'm going to throw... All I want is screen credit. Let me read that script first, and then we'll work it out. I'll show it to other professionals. All I ask, I don't want money. Just give me the screen credit, because I don't want that franchise to be blown away. And because I think as a director, he could work. I mean, number one, he comes in at a very good budget. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that I was... Chappie moved along at a pace. There wasn't much downtime, drag time, say as much as the leasing. He is just not a good storyteller. And when he's working off of his own scripts, and he even says he works instinctually. Well, dude, your instincts are off.
They're kind
because, of- like, somebody asked him, he goes, you have all these themes. Did you set out? He goes, oh, no, as a filmmaker, I go off instinct, and I feel like this is where I should be going. And this movie, I think you said, scatterbrained. I mean, it was like Buckshot,
I think the thing is because like he's obviously a very creative person who comes up with some very interesting things to talk about. So to get that and for someone to be able to hone it into a story could be great.
Okay.
Right. Sorry. I think the thing is like
John's like back Neil, away from the mic.
Neil for his movies, he generally goes off of ideas. That's it. I mean, even Elysium, that was based off of visual graphic sketches and stuff. And then he's like, oh, what kind of storyline could be right along with this? Same with this. He had his short promo video. He was like, hey, I have an idea. As I believe in the origin, he was walking down the stairs calling out to his significant others like, hey, I have an idea. Let's do something with a corporate robot. And write that into a story. So, like, he starts with ideas that don't have, like, clear-cut beginning, middle, end storylines. He just kind of, when he's doing the films, kind of is like, okay, this story can go with my idea. It's not fleshed out like it should have been.
Now, so, did anybody watch the short? I mean, it's a short. I mean, it's less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's a minute and 21. So, it's really just
it's like a trailer.
Pretty almost.
It's the Tetrivolt.
I really liked the trailer for Chappie.
Oh, did you?
Okay. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like the trailer. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because I saw it and I was like going, oh, wait. Johnny Speed Five is alive. No, it's Short Circuit. It's sure, John Badham. It's Short Circuit who becomes alive. He becomes self-aware, and the military are hunting him down for this so that they can take him apart. And I'm like going, I've seen this movie done at Short Circuit. Number Five is alive. Yeah, I'd rather watch that. And as I'm watching this, I'm like going, oh, where's Johnny Five and Steve Guttenberg right now to save the day? I'm like,
and Fisher Stevens.
And Fisher Stevens, yeah, and Ali Sheedy, and John Badham. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just like, again, I'm going back to movies of the 80s. There are so many more interesting stories that have been told. The inspiration was there. Mm-hmm. This could have been there, and it could have been done originally. Like, it could have been done in an original fashion. And it just didn't happen.
I think everybody is saying that if they had a different screenwriter, or maybe somebody else looking at it, that this would have been a much better product. Is that what?
Yeah, I think the thing is like Neil has like a certain vision. He's more of a visionary than a storyteller, which right. I think we can all agree. Because in Elysium, District 9, and now this movie, like he likes the different worlds, the different environments, like the rundown environment, and then like then also like the corporate environment. So like I'm constantly seeing that in all of his movies, like the two different worlds that people live in. So it's like, and then write the storyline that goes to both worlds. But so, visionary.
Since we've talked a lot about that, then let's talk more about our actors. Sure. Because Hugh Jackman, what did we think? First of all, I was just surprised that he was in this, and then I was surprised as I was watching, I'm going, why did he say yes? How did they get him to do this? I couldn't see what he was doing it for. I mean, like, as an acting exercise, I can't really see it. I was like, I don't know where he's breaking new ground, and I'm just wondering why he chose it.
And again, I think it's because Neil Blomkamp, for whatever reason, has built this. He's built this thing of being a great director. Mm-hmm. Like, District 9 came out, and I understand why there was so much focus, attention on District 9. Mm-hmm. He made an alien kind of movie that had a message. It was filmed in a way, such an original way that we hadn't seen before. It was a special effects movie that was done on the cheap, right. And I think...
And that way, at that time, that movie, the message didn't get messed up by the way they kind of supported each other. Would you agree?
Because of the comments he was making on... Absolutely. Okay. And he brought, this thing played in festivals, and the way that it was released as an art house film, but it grew. So he got a lot of street cred from that movie.
Sure.
And then Elysium came out, which... It got better reviews than Chappie, but still people said he's a visionary director. He's got a great look. He can do this, and for to get Sigourney Weaver, to get Hugh Jackman. Yeah, I think part of it is, hey, you know what? I'm going to get to work with this guy. People are saying that he's a great filmmaker and whatever. That could have been part of the reason. I don't hear that he's a zealot as a director. I understand that he works well with cast and crew, and people like to work with him again and again. Yeah, I mean, he has a crew of people that continually.
His performance was.
You asked how he got into the movie.
I did.
No, my thing is, like, first of all, I love Hugh Jackman. He's amazing in all aspects. But my thing was, like, I had a problem with this character. Yes, Hugh Jackman finally played the asshole character, which is nice. I mean, it's like, I was like, okay, this is good change for him. I can see him be something else than he's not. My problem is with the characters, like Sarah said, so many different directions, but also, what was his motivation why he was the asshole? Like, why does he want to take down Dion and his, like, I get he wants his machine, but he was so aggressive, and it made me think maybe he was, like, dishonorably discharged from the military, like, because he had that background. I was like, why is he so adamant just to try to get his model out before Dion's? I get that, but it's just there was somewhat of a disconnect there with his character.
It's I feel like, talking about the acting wise, mm-hmm, it's almost hard to focus in on that because I don't believe the character, mm-hmm, and I don't know whether or not, like, I put more of the blame on that on story, and it's making it really hard to be like how I felt he did it, because I don't know who I would have liked better in that role, because I didn't like the role.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like the role. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, in terms of his, I thought his presence, his commitment, everything was there. I mean, I don't think he missed a note. I don't think they didn't give him great stuff. But I think with what he had to work with, I thought he was absolutely. Yeah, like,
and I think he didn't have to work outside of his Australian accent. I think that was, I agree. I think his commitment was there. But I'll say this for Hugh Jackman. I think his commitment would be in any project
that
he's in.
I can appreciate that. Whereas, you know, it was just so uneven, because here you have Sigourney. Sigourney did a fine job, too.
Anybody could have done
that.
But then you had everybody else was like...
Yeah.
Except for, I actually like Charlton, and I don't even know how to, if it's him, it's partly him, it's partly animation, whatever, but I like Chappie in terms of the characterization of it.
All the movements.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, but my point is the unevenness of the rest of it is, like, I was just curious about the choice of having cast those actors.
He wanted Johannesburg flavor in the movie, so... Mm-hmm. Of our three gangsters, one of them was an actor. He's been in Walking Dead, America, as a matter of fact. Okay, the other two are actually from Johannesburg.
No, that part I got, but aren't they musicians? This
yeah, and, but he felt that they had the attitude that he wanted, and you know, so that's how they got. You know, hey, they won the lottery.
They did.
I feel like I would not call. I call this bankrupt.
No, I feel like it's they are exactly what he wanted. Yeah. Like He wanted gangsters that were wearing, like,
Dolphin sweaters and money boxers.
And, like, had a shrine of their multicolored guns. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I could totally see how these musicians fit his ideal for these crazy gangsters. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I believe it or that it works. Mm-hmm. I understand
that's my point, they cast
what he wanted, and I just don't like what he wanted.
And that's what I'm questioning, is like, okay, that's fine if you want all that, but they didn't, for me, have the chops to pull it off.
No.
Yeah, no.
That was the weak link in the acting, is like, I don't believe any of these people. They don't have any depth. Granted, part of that's the writing, but part of it was just, it was so unbelievable that it was just hard, just like, okay, just can we get on to something that's...
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Why would we want to?
I mean, I really didn't believe.
There's nobody
that
to root for.
Yeah, there really isn't. But the thing is, like, again, the unbelievable effect is, like, how can we even believe you're even going to have a successful heist if you don't take yourself seriously? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I couldn't. I can't believe that they could successfully deliver a bottle of milk.
No,
so,
but
I mean, because they were
there was that moment where Ninja is just going off on a rant and yelling and cursing his head off to Chappie and whatnot and Dion, but he's in the big bright blue dolphin sweater. I was like, I can't take you seriously.
No,
and you don't
take him serious.
And I was like, are you really?
Because all he's looking at your sweater.
On top of that, you're supposed to create these people who you are fearful of, who could be serious crime lords who are in the presence of that other guy with the crazy hair.
Yeah, Hippo, isn't it?
Whatever his name was. And there were just times where I just knew that they weren't ever going to be the ones hurt Chappie or Dion.
They didn't really, I mean, it was...
And I should have believed that from them.
Any of the Jeopardy was just kind of fake. So there wasn't real jeopardy because you couldn't take any of those people seriously.
Yeah, right. I think they were more bark than bite.
In contrast, like, I kind of took Jackman seriously, even though he was a zealot or whatever. But you kind of, it's just the playing field was just not
easy. It was much like the story. Yeah, it was all over the place. Yeah. But again, you know, when we talk about the performances, we started off with Hugh Jackman. Dev Patel is the geeky nerd maker. Now, my only problem with Dev Patel was that silly, God, the silly scene when he was at home. You know, he goes, "Robot, you know, Red Bull me," and he drinks the Red Bull. He's like, "Ah!" And I'm like going, well, is that product how people placement. Really drink Red Bull? Like, and he was like, ha, ha, and he's like gone to the computer, and I'm like going, okay, he's going to do this eventually. We're going to get to the 100%. You know, but I understood Dev Patel's, I understood Maker's sensitivity, you know, and in that character, and again, wanting to nature and nurture his creation and what he did. And again, it was just thrown away. Dev Patel was fine in the role. Mm-hmm.
I agree that I really liked his, like, wanting to let him be creative.
Oh, sure.
And, like, when he brought the paints and this whole, like, box of music. And then I was like, oh, where'd it go?
Yeah, and where did he go? He was gone from the movie for so long. That was the thing that really kind of... I was questioning so much of it as, like, okay, Dev Patel's a major character. But then he's gone for, I don't know, 20 minutes.
He was gone for a while.
And then he comes back.
It's like, oh, look who's back.
Oh, right, we're back. And going to what you're so unfocused, I go, where's your through line? Where's your story? Say, right. What are you doing?
And I would have liked it better if he painted more, like he painted like a printer.
Yeah.
And I was like, it would have been. Yeah, well, it was fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But again, if you want to go with the human aspect of it, for him to look, and instead of doing, like going back and forth, which we sort of kind of even see, I guess, a little bit in Hugo. Let's go back to that movie. Like, it would have been for the humanistic character, it would have been like Data in Star Trek loves to paint, and he'll replicate a Rembrandt perfectly, but at least he paints. It would have been nice to see Chappie at least try to.
Well, see, that was his first time. What I would have liked to see the progression of that
of the creative.
Started out and I said, oh, this is going to be great.
But
we're going
to get
to see
it anymore.
No,
because it's ruined by the gangsters.
Because that I think it would I think it was smart to start out like a robot, like a printer, because that's virtually what he is at that point. Then as he gains more consciousness and more then it would have been interesting to see, but we don't get to see
no.
So
you do he does get a doll and he does give her a haircut.
That's true. That was nice. It was
terrible
good
haircut.
That was very arty. That hair was very arty. Right, okay.
Mommy.
All right. Let's move on to music. No, because usually you guys have a lot to say about music.
Okay, I'm a soundtrack guy. I was very okay. Two things. I was surprised and then not surprised that Hans Zimmer did the score.
Okay, why were you surprised?
Well, I was surprised because throughout the whole movie, I wasn't thinking Hans Zimmer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when his name came up, the one scene that it came out to was Chappie's He-Man moment when he comes out to face Ed 209. Because that's what I'm going to call that robot, is Ed 209. And then they do Ed 209. And he does the slow-mo thing. And the music was so over the top, bombastic, and I was like, when I saw Hans Zimmer, I was like, oh, really? Well, yeah, of course it was. Wow, this is really, and I love soundtracks, and I have a lot of Hans Zimmer soundtracks on my iTunes.
This is not one rule, but what are you thinking of it? It usually affects you.
Music does normally affect me, but I feel like music's very important to film. I love music, and I'm totally a soundtrack fan, but normally my opinion on it is either it's either adding and I'm like, wow, that made such a scope to the scene. It made me more emotionally involved, or it pulled me out. Mm-hmm. And I was so pulled out of this movie already that I wasn't thinking about how the music was making me feel, because I was more thinking about how this script and the story was making me feel. And I was looking so hard to figure out why these characters were doing what they were doing that I couldn't even think about the music.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't even recognize the music during that whole big bombastic scene. Also, because I was more thinking, it's like, how come no one is stopping Vincent? He's going crazy right now and like literally on a rampage, and no one is there to stop him.
He been alone in this factory for so long.
I know.
All
like,
the
how come
are, like,
no
everywhere,
one is stopping
and no one's
him?
At, trying to like figure it out.
And that's what was bothering me. And like the whole battle scene, whatever, and even we see Yolanda Handy try to sacrifice herself. I was like, no.
I was so busy trying to fix all the plot holes that I couldn't think about the music either.
I couldn't even appreciate it. I could not appreciate it.
Like, it was just unfixable. Like, I wasn't trying to.
I appreciate that part. When they're going to do their battle and the three of them are walking out and then Chappie walks in from the side and they're doing all the slow-mo shots.
Yeah, it's Michael Bay.
Yeah, I've seen it. I was going, they even used that.
Yeah, he even does that.
I was enjoying it for the you know, not for a good reason. I don't think he intended me to laugh at that moment, but yeah.
When Yolanda gets shot through the Chappie shirt.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So,
I don't know. Okay. You know, what's interesting is too that you know we should talk about you know gross wise. Okay. Not that it was a fantastic. You know, they can say they're number one.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know what? We'll talk about budget because
what else did it have to go up against though?
Unfinished business,
which did worse than this movie.
No, I know, but you were asking, and I'm just telling you. You know, we still have 50 Shades out there. We still got a couple of movies, but
I think American Sniper is still doing.
But the interesting thing is, and you do talk about budget. So all in, we're talking approximately estimated $80 million
in production, and then 82.
Right, so. You know, you're talking about an opening weekend domestic gross of $13+ million. Look, if they get to Crow, they're number one.
30 overall or 25?
It's about 32 right now. 32, maybe 31, 32 estimated without, you know.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what the next week's out.
Well, the worldwide box office is 32.
That's what I mean. Okay, it's not getting great word of mouth.
No, but, you know, it's interesting because this is a movie that comes out on close to, you know, it's over 3,000 locations, right? Now, last week, Phil and I talked about Leonard Nimoy, and we talked about Three Men and a Baby. Mm-hmm. Now, this movie opened up in less than 2,000 locations. And it opened up at $10 million, and throughout its entire run, ends up grossing $167 million, being the number one movie of 1987. The number one movie of 1987 with an opening gross of $10 million. Chappie ain't gonna make 50, like, domestically. And I'm just talking domestic. I mean, you know, it's crazy how times have changed in the world of distribution and exhibition and letting movies like this movie is not going to have, well, it's not going to have legs. No. They're not going to allow it, you know, to breathe. It's 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is about right. I would have been low. The mere fact that it got a B on CinemaScore.
That's 30% approval rate, but it has a 5 out of 10 in terms of its rating, so it's getting 50-50.
It's B on CinemaScore, which to me is insane. It's insane to me. So I just don't think people, you know, people aren't going to, well, A, they ain't going to go back a second time. B, we've got other movies opening up this.
Do I have to just try to figure out, wait a minute. What,
there's
you've
nothing
got Cinderella, and you have a Liam Neeson action movie. You know, Chappie's going to do, you know, that'll have at least a 60%+, if not higher, drop. And, you know, what are we in? We're in March right now, right? Yeah, I would say, before we get into April, before Fast and Furious comes out, Chappie is going to be a memory.
I think it's going to fade from people's memories or be a nightmare. But anyway, I'm just surprised that the word of mouth on this isn't worse. Because I knew people who saw this this weekend, they were like, oh, there's some plot holes. If I saw this, what I'm going to tell people is like, bad movie.
I think it's just because they don't care about plot holes. They just keep going, and you know, they go fast, which is good in this kind of movie. It's like, don't worry about the plot holes. Don't pay attention. Just, you know, don't worry about the guy behind the curtain. Just keep going.
Look at the cool robot.
So I think that's what most people
explosions.
Do.
Yeah, and they can't blame piracy on this. And the only thing they get to claim is they were number one. But it's like being, you know,
but
king
against
of the shit
what?
Pile and saying, hey, look, I'm number one. Well, that's great. It was such an awesome weekend at the box office. Yeah, we're going to see what happens. But again, you know, the movies, it's going to stand on its own and see, and we'll see where it goes.
Does anyone know if it has a green light for number two?
As far as I know, it does not.
No.
Okay. As far as I know,
no, because the only talk I've heard from the movie is Alien. That's it. Yeah. That's the only talk. Yeah. He and Sigourney Weaver are talking about the next Alien thing. And even before I saw Chappie, that scared the hell out of me. And then after I saw Chappie, I'm like, people at Fox, like, please, just listen. Just take care. Like, we need people to shepherd franchises. And if you're going to do that, but you need somebody, like, let's not fall into Predator versus Alien. Let's not do Prometheus. Just have people who care about these properties. And if you want him to direct, have him direct, but take the script away and writing away from him, and so be it. So just
he and his wife, by the way, he writes with his wife. They wrote this one together, as they did with District 9. So just wanted to give her the credit.
Sure.
She's on it, so.
You know, it's,
she's also under the bus.
Trey Tatchell.
Well, she's also under the bus. You know, I just, I don't know, onwards and upwards. I haven't heard, I can't see that they're going to make the sequel.
No,
I can't see they're going to,
yeah,
maybe
only
in an
because
animated
the storyline, they said they discontinued it. So I was like, okay, good. We're done. It's discontinued.
Yeah. Do we have any, maybe we should have our last thought be a good one, shall we?
Designers visually. On Chappie. I know there are people from Great. New Zealand who worked on it. Award-winning
technical
companies. You're doing great. Good job.
Keep seamless animation.
Good work.
Yeah. You know, I go even further. Like, I do appreciate what was done cinematography-wise. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that the fact that this was done on a red camera and how they had to, and how they filmed Chappie. I mean, it was a poor man's version of motion capture.
Which worked very well.
Yeah, I thought,
I was looking at him going, it's seamless, I can't tell. I mean, as I'm watching, I'm going, it looks like a dude. How did they do that? Because that looks so cool.
And also, there was a man who, there was a Wired interview, but he was also in charge of the VFX on this. And
yeah, Trent Opelov.
Yes.
Yeah.
He mentioned that for the cops, they were portrayed by actors, but they had helmets that had GoPros attached to them.
Nice.
So they had like hundreds of hours of footage just from the GoPros.
Right. That's cool.
And that's where we got all the first person point of view shooting.
I thought that was great. I loved that first
thing. Which I liked.
They had real cops hiding behind you. I was like,
And
again, the promise of something, I go, that's so cool that they, just the way they were. And then I didn't see any of that.
Yeah.
No.
That at the beginning of the movie, and that's where I was like, okay, 16-year-old boy, teenager boys would love this because this is like a RPG kind of game.
Yeah, but
I just,
again, trying to leave on a positive note.
Yeah.
You know, again, I appreciate the tech aspects that were done. I appreciate that it was animated. And again, if you're coming up, look, I think for young filmmakers, I think to study the way that this budgetary efficient motion capture, look, you have an alternative now that might be able to be done on an efficient level. You don't have to go Planet of the Apes, okay, which that movie was nominated visual effects, okay, and it was beautifully done. But now it looks like they've created, or there's an alternative out there, and watch this movie and think about Trent's way of visual effects and how they did this, and think about using the Red Epic camera, because it can be done, and you know what, you might even get better results than Chappie. I'm just saying, like, there are positive aspects.
This is close to staying positive that whole time.
I'm doing my best. I don't want to be that person. You know, as much as I really did dislike this movie, I think that tech specs and being able to work around an environment, to shoot quick in 65 days and use technology to your advantage to make it affordable, economical, and efficient. You know, this movie was obviously shot that way.
Sure.
So there, I'll leave on a positive note. I won't call it crappy.
The last word on the positive note.
There you go.
I will give it. Visually and technically, it was great and fun to watch and listen to. Yes, the story, we've discussed it, but, I mean, I feel like he's going to make a lot of action movies, no doubt about that, so I'm hoping his future ones will be more entertaining.
Well, I can't wait for the sequel. Tell them where they can find you.
You can find me here on AfterBuzz TV, on Box Office Breakdown, and, yeah, wonderful.
Marissa?
You can follow me on Twitter at Serafini TV.
You can see me here at Anatomy of a Movie and on Twitter at DMovies1701. That's at DMovies1701. And on the Popcorn Talk Network, talk and eat popcorn all the time.
Is that where they can find you, John?
The only place you can find me is on Popcorn Talk Network. Thanks very much for listening, people. We'll talk to you next time. No fucking around, I'm cutting down anyone I'm a guard. Trying to fuck up my game with razor sharp. Political throw start, get him a flow sharp.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.